Welcome and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. On this week's episode, NAHU's Marcy Buckner, John Green, and Chris Hartman unpack the latest healthcare headlines and what they could mean for bipartisan cooperation on our legislative priorities. We'll also look at the latest headlines on Medicare for All as the 2020 presidential contest gets underway, and we'll review the latest Medicare guidance on the 2020 proposed rates and plan changes, as well as our comments to the America First prescription drug changes to Medicare plans. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop for the Washington Update podcast this week is the influx of attention in Congress on healthcare issues, particularly as it relates to pre-existing conditions and lowering costs. The House and Senate held several hearings this week on these issues, some that showed potential for bipartisan cooperation and others that continued partisan attacks. What are some things that lawmakers should take away from this week in healthcare on the Hill?
Thanks, Dan. So you talked about partisan attacks and bipartisan cooperation. And at several of the hearings we saw this week, we saw a little of both going on. I attended this week at the Ways and Means Committee a hearing on pre-existing conditions and how they're working and the current law. And I think you heard from a lot of the witnesses about how people's lives are improved by ensuring that with pre-existing conditions, they can change jobs, they can go on from the individual market to the employer-based system and back around. We also heard from association health plans that were represented at that hearing. And so I think there's a real consensus that we don't want to go back, especially on the individual market, to the pre-existing conditions day that were out there. However, at the same time in that hearing, you still hear the same old battles around Obamacare is terrible, and we tried to pass a repeal and replace, and there was no actual replace in the repeal. And so some of the members of Congress are still stuck in their old partisan battle lines when it comes to healthcare policy. But there is a niche constituency, I think, on both sides of the aisle, on a committee like Ways and Means that is looking forward to seeing things get done, see if we can just overall improve healthcare system in this country, not the ACA, not the other direction, but like what can we do to improve the current healthcare system that exists in the U.S.
And in that hearing specifically, I think it was interesting. So getting out of just the partisanship that was happening within the committee hearing and the questions, even though there was someone representing an association health plan, there were others on the witness panel that discussed the fact that having the AHPs and the short-term plans actually led to more uncertainty in the market, especially with this coming year being really the first year that those two products are available to consumers without any penalties attached. And according to the new rules that were finalized over 2018. So I thought that was really interesting. And then also really discussing pre-2010 to where we are now. And then also looking at what could happen if these protections were taken away in the individual market and what some states are doing to take action to try to prevent that from happening within their borders and states that have gone kind of above and beyond to protect those with pre-existing conditions. So those were some of the things that I saw. And then also the discussion of high-risk pools. And here it was really interesting. You guys know that we've been talking about hybrid high-risk pools, kind of marrying high-risk pools and reinsurance. And here, when they were talking about high-risk pools, they were talking about the old system of high-risk pools, where it was a completely separate pool. You knew if you were in this high-risk pool. And oftentimes there were issues with funding and other pieces. And so it really emphasized, I think, the need for the hybrid structure that we've been talking about, where if you are in this high-risk pool, you don't necessarily know it. You are part of the pool with everybody else. You have the same card, which I think will help with some of the financial restraints that we saw of the high-risk pools of old, which drew some criticism in this specific hearing.
I attended a hearing that went the other way on a different topic on drug pricing in the Senate, and the tenor of that hearing couldn't have been more dramatically differ. It reminded me under Chairman Grassley of the hearings I used to attend 10, 12 years ago. But it was really refreshing to hear them listen actually to what the witnesses said and ask relevant questions and not poke the people on the other side of the aisle in the eye in any sort of way. As we go down this road of looking at drug pricing, I would really look at what's happening in the Senate Finance Committee as a barometer for where the action will be on this issue and for the solutions that they arrive at.
What I found interesting about the Senate Finance Committee hearing on drug pricing is really intense focus on value-based purchasing, which is something that we here at NEHU have looked at. There were several questions about that from some of the senators, and a lot of the witnesses did say that this would be something that they believed would be beneficial. Also saying that with value-based pricing, there would be a price that was established and negotiated, and that would be the price that carries through the supply chain, which is different than now where we have the different prices based on the list price, the rebate price, and a back-end adjustment. And so this would allow for more of one certain price to be held throughout the system. And then another piece that I found interesting from that hearing is also, and you mentioned Senator Grassley already, John, his question about the Medicaid drug rebate program. And I think here it shows, as much as we think sometimes that Congress and the White House aren't talking to each other, they actually are, because this hearing was on January 29th, and just 2 days later, President Trump came out, or the administration came out with the proposed rule for fraud and abuse and removal of safe harbors and protection for rebating involving prescription drugs. So it was clear here that Senator Grassley was teeing up these witnesses to go ahead and ask about the issues of the Medicaid drug rebate program as the administration was about to release a proposed rule that basically allows HHS more flexibility in removing the rebate program or using the rebate program so that the savings will actually be passed down to patients. But this is really going to be in markets that the government controls, not in the private markets. Unfortunately, under the current system with rebates, they're not typically passed through to patients. Oftentimes, they're kept by the insurers or the PBMs that say they use the extra money to keep premiums low. But here, under the proposed rule, it would eliminate the legal exemption and make rebates that drug makers give insurance plans and PBMs subject to fines under the federal kickback statute. So I think that it was really interesting to see kind of that foreshadowing from Senator Grassley right before we saw that proposed rule from the Trump administration. And then also as a foreshadowing, I think for something that we're going to talk about in just a little bit, the House also had a hearing on prescription drug prices. And amongst the many things that they talked about with issues of cost with patents and generics, cost shifting, the effect of the ACA, research and development, advertising, the question that was raised was Medicare for all and how that may affect cost pricing. And it was interesting because the question was actually posed to Dr. Avik Roy, who is someone that NEHU has worked with across the board on several different projects. And when asked if a government-run system like Medicare for all for prescription drug prices would be helpful, he actually said that a private system more like Medicare Advantage would contain competition and help control prices, whereas the Medicare program, the way that it is now, wouldn't necessarily do that. So I thought that was very interesting, especially going into the fact that we are going to see a lot of conversation next week on Medicare for All. There was also a question in the Senate hearing about whether single payer, which is different than Medicare for All, would be better for drug prices. And we basically got kind of the same answer that was not positive on that. So I think a lot of foreshadowing in these hearings, as well as just getting more information and having some of those partisanships coming out.
Speaking of foreshadowing, just to go back to Chairman Grassley for a moment, his relationship with Chairman Alexander and the Health Committee is going to be a lot different as well. They are coordinating, speaking to each other, trying to have a more coordinated approach to healthcare issues. That bodes well for us, as many of the issues that we care about, you brought up reinsurance, it will cross jurisdictional committee lines and so forth, and there'll need to be cooperation, and they've established that cooperation. So we may get action on issues that we care about in the Senate due to that cooperation.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. Last year, one of the problem was that Chairman Hatch didn't always get along with Chairman Alexander on the Senate side. So the two committees most important to our work in the Senate are Senate Finance and Senate Health. When those two chairmen are not getting along, even though they're of the same party, it is not good for seeing positive changes to the overall health care system. So I am looking forward to Chairman Alexander working with Chairman Grassley, and hopefully we can see some good legislation coming out of the Senate.
With the federal government open again, at least temporarily, and the renewed interest in other legislative issues, what does this mean for our legislative priorities as we quickly approach our 29th annual Capitol Conference?
Well, we've already seen the hearings on some of our issues, which, of course, were scheduled before we knew that the government was going to be back open. So I think that bodes very well, though, for interest in our issues. And I'll also speak on the regulatory side. Even with the government closed, we did eventually get the notice of benefit and payment parameters for 2020 plan year, which, as we've noted in other podcasts, was very much delayed and came out very late as compared to in years past. And then we, like I mentioned earlier, just received the proposed rule on rebating for prescription drugs for specifically those markets that are overseen by the government. So we are seeing some uptick on both the regulatory side and I think in Congress, but I'll let John and Chris talk specifically about the calendar for Congress.
There are more bills coming back from last Congress going to be reintroduced in this Congress. So there'll be a lot of that. Some of it will be in time for Capitol Conference, but that does not mean that you still won't go and talk about them. We will prepare you with talking points on those, with everything except for the bill number. So employer reporting would be a prime example. We don't think that we'll have the bill dropped in time to have a bill number, but that doesn't mean it's not important and that it's still not on the radar. And with so many new members, this is really important that you come and educate these new members, not only on what you do, but on the importance of why these problems or these issues need to be resolved by Congress.
Yeah, I think even if some of these bills are not introduced by the time Cap Conference happens, it's very important to get the message out there that these issues need to be addressed. Each body only has one bill introduced on Cadillac tax and the HIT tax, even if the other isn't in, it's still, we want to make people know that this is important and needs to be addressed now. The same thing on employer reporting. And so people in Congress do not feel motivated to move if they do not feel their constituents are looking for something to happen. And so we have to keep the pressure on them to make sure that these issues get in the pipeline very early, particularly before we start getting into the presidential craziness season. And we want to see these issues addressed now.
The issue of single payer continues to make headlines this week, with several Democratic presidential contenders offering their thoughts on government-run healthcare and the future of the private health insurance marketplace. What is NAHU doing to help shape this conversation in the public at large as the debate takes the main stage and on Capitol Hill?
So this week, we particularly heard Kamala Harris come out saying she wanted to eliminate private sector insurers in health insurance. And this came in a CNN interview. Once that statement was made, there was quite a bit of backlash. You saw several different politicians distancing themselves from that statement, including her fellow Senator Dianne Feinstein, who says she believes that the private insurers have a place in the market. And then you did see by the staff some walking back of it the next day. So I think it really demonstrates how people don't really understand what Medicare for All means. And that Medicare for All, under the way that Bernie Sanders has designed his bill, does eliminate the private market of insurance. And so this really highlights how many people have gotten on this bill without really understanding the consequences, that we're saying there will not be choice available to consumers. There will be just one size fits all option for everyone out there without the variety of the market available.
It's clear that the American people and the public doesn't understand what this means, as Chris said. When you look at the polling, it will reflect whatever the question is being posed. If it's not put together in the right way to account for the variables, then you're going to get an answer that may be misleading. And so it's clear that generally it's going to require a lot of education on our part to explain and fill those gaps in knowledge.
I think when we talk about the American public not understanding it, it is a difficult subject, but it's also knowing the difference between single payer, Medicare for All, Medicare buy-in, all of these different options. And I think that was even a good example from what I talked about earlier with the question about drug prices, when the question was, would the Medicare system be better? And the answer was, well, Medicare Advantage would be good, but regular Medicare wouldn't. And even within Medicare, there are differences where in some products you're going to have a choice and in others you aren't. And I think a lot of this, when you're talking to healthcare consumers, health insurance consumers, when you ask about it, it really comes down to, am I going to have a choice? And I think that is really what we revolve a lot of our messaging around, is whether these plans, these options that are coming out, are going to offer a choice. And seeing the results of Senator Harris's interview on CNN, and as Chris mentioned, the staff kind of walking it back, and then Senator Feinstein, you know, offering a different perspective, I think that also really shows that there isn't a consensus amongst the Senate Democrats, and there definitely isn't one amongst the House Democrats on what they want to see with an alternative for some type of single payer / Medicare for all or any other type of plan like that. So I think that is a good sign for us as we battle these messages and try to educate consumers on what the differences are and why it's so important to preserve the health insurance market as we have it now with consumer choices in the private market. And then as we go forward next week, we are going to be sending out some messages on some Medicare for All proposals for Operation Shouts and trying to get our message out at the same time that the Hill is having a lot of hearings on this and we'll be promoting it. So we'll also be promoting our message alongside some of the messages that are coming out from the Hill to make sure that our voice is heard.
It's now time for the Senior Moment, NAHU's review of key happenings in Medicare and long-term care policy. John, as the lead of these issue areas, what is your Senior Moment for the week?
So this week, I want to turn it over to Marcy Buckner, because there's been a lot of action actually on the regulatory side of the ledger.
Sure. I'm prepared to talk about these things. So last week on Friday, we submitted our comments to the Modernizing Part D and Medicare Advantage to Lower Drug Prices and Reduce Out-of-Pocket Expenses proposed rule. And there were a lot of things in here that we liked and a few things that we wanted to ask the administration to try to tweak. So we do believe that this proposed rule will help Medicare Advantage and Part D issuers to better manage their prescription drug costs on a plan level, and that other measures in the proposed rule will help Medicare beneficiaries to save money directly. We also supported the amendments in the proposed rule to implement the recent requirements banning gag clauses in Part D plan pharmacy contracts so that pharmacist is able to tell you where you could possibly save money when you're in one of these plans and you're going to fill your prescriptions. We also endorsed the proposal to revise the definition to negotiate price for pharmacies so that the negotiated price for any drug covered by a Part D plan must reflect all pharmacy price concessions and dispensing fees, excluding any contingent amounts like incentive fees that might raise prices. So this would help with transparency. We also supported the proposed changes to e-prescribing standards that will allow Part D plan participants to get real-time specific prescription drug cost information specific personally to them at the time of care. However, the rule allows for a phased rollout of the new requirements, and it only stipulates that the plan must implement one real-time electronic benefit tool of their choosing that is capable of integrating with the provider electronic medical records and e-prescribing systems, and the deadline for that is January 1st of 2020. Our comments there was to request a follow-up implementation evaluation during the year of 2020, just to make sure that everything is running appropriately and that the intentions of the rule is actually what is followed through with as it's implemented. We also believe that there's a chance here, again, for increased prescription drug price transparency. And for that, we're supportive of the implementation of the real-time benefit tool technology. Our members also that we spoke to about this proposed rule believe that there would be a high associated administrative cost for the Part D plan sponsors when implementing this requirement. So here's another area where we did offer some concern that this cost would ultimately be passed on to consumers in the form of higher premiums. So we did have some caution there. Ultimately, members recommend either eliminating the requirement from the final rule or only requiring including this information in the explanation of benefits that include claims for maintenance drugs. So overall, we are really pretty supportive of the Part D proposed rule. Again, this is a proposal, so we are waiting for the final rule to come out. And we do thank those members on our Medicare advisory group that worked with us in providing our comments. The other big piece that came out from Medicare was this week, and it was the Medicare Advantage Annual Guidance proposed rates for 2020. And this comes out in two pieces. Part one is the 2020 advance notice, and part two is the 2020 draft call letter. So in the advance notice, CMS proposes updates to the methodologies used to pay Medicare Advantage plans and Part D sponsors. And they go through basically the risk adjustment model proposals. There is an expected average change in revenue of 1.59%. And they make adjustments to the risk adjustment model to take into account the number of conditions an individual beneficiary may have, and to make an additional adjustment as the number of conditions increases. A lot of what they're doing is also to take into account pieces that were included in the 21st Century Cures Act, requiring that CMS fully phase in these changes specific to the risk adjustment model by 2022. In the 2020 draft call letter, which is part two of all of this, they do include a section on improving drug reutilization review controls. And this is really their piece at looking at the use of opioids. And they say, given the urgency and scope of the continuing national opioid epidemic, CMS is proposing a number of additional policies for 2020 to help Medicare plan sponsors prevent and combat prescription opioid overuse. And the areas that they're looking at are pain management and complementary and integrative treatments in Medicare Advantage, access to opioid reversal agents, and the use of star ratings. And star rating enhancements are getting a lot of attention, not just in the areas of how they're used for opioids, but they're also looking at taking away and announcing the removal of three measures from the 2022 star ratings because they showed low statistical reliability. And those were for adult BMI assessment in Part C, appeals auto forward in Part D, and appeals upheld also in Part D. They're also looking at special supplemental benefits for the chronically ill. So these are all things that we will be looking at in this proposed rule. Comments are not due until March 1st, so we'll continue to go through the rule and see if there are any areas where NEHU believes we should comment on, and we'll be working with our Medicare advisory group on putting those comments together.
It's now time for the NEHU Healthcare Happy Hours Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to this week?
This week, we're toasting to the government shutdown being over, Congress being back in session, and focusing on some of our issues through hearings and bill proposals.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.